The following is an unrehearsed interview with Mr. John French by Mary Jane Sharp for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted at the Farmers Home Administration on June 23rd at 3:30. Okay, Mr. French, could you give me some information, some background information about your family, first of all, and the farm? Let's go with your family first off.
My immediate family?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Okay. I got three. The boy, a girl, and a boy. I always thought three was an ideal family because I was fortunate enough to get them that way. Robert's my oldest boy. He's Dennis. And Cheryl. She's a veterinarian, and I think she was in school with you. And Johnny's youngest boy, he finished Moorhead about 4 years ago, and then he went to service. He's in service 4 years. Now he's back in Moorhead taking up computer science, because helping me there on the farm. That's about it.
Okay. Okay, can you give me some information about the size of your farm?
Well, let's see. The farm I live on is about 120 acres. And then the family farm, where my wife still owns it, it's about 163. That makes about right at 300 acres here in Mason County. And then we still got the old homestead farm down in Davis County. Honestly, I don't know exactly how many acres there that my mother sold off. 7 acres there before she died, and we still got it. We're not doing any particular thing with it. It's just there.
Mm-hmm. Do you have tenants, or do
you? Yes, I have tenants that raise the tobacco. Mm-hmm. I have a boy that raised tobacco there on the farm I live on. He works at Brownings, and he raises tobacco and hit me in the hay. And then the boy that raises tobacco on the other farm, because he's got a little farm, joined it, and he raises tobacco there, which works out real well. Mm-hmm. Of course, I got cattle on both farms, just mixed up, mm-hmm. No pure bread.
Mm-hmm. So you have a mixture then of livestock with products?
Yes.
Is there any one main product that is the most profitable for you, or I guess tobacco is quite significant?
Yes, tobacco. Well, all tobacco and livestock. Actually, you don't make too much from neither one. Time you, the landlord, that's the landlord's picture now. Time you pay all the expenses, and that's fertilizer, seed, that ready meal, and seeding the ground back. You don't realize too much. You think you're getting a lot of money in a large lump sum, but when you sit down and divvy it all out, you end up with nothing. Mm-hmm. So it's, but it's just I don't know, a good living.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me, if I could probe into your background, have you always been involved with farming? Did you grow
up on a farm? Yes. Born and raised on a farm, I was 15 of us. I've seen a lot of changes. How we survived, I don't know. Now, it was, we was born and raised on around about a 48-acre farm. We survived. All of us kids went to high school. We all finished college. Now, this is something very strange. There's a lot of families there, one, two, maybe three kids, too poor to send the kids to school. They drop out fourth, fifth, sixth grade, eighth grade, but we've managed some sort of way to get through. And so it's always a way that if you really want to go. I know my two older sisters, they went to Paducah, that before they closed down that school, Paducah, back in the 30s. They had two dresses between them. And that's just how poor that, you know, people were back in those days. And other kids thought they were sharp because they could change dresses once in a while.
Yeah.
And so that's the really the background.
Where did you go to school?
Went to Kentucky State. Well, I finished Kentucky State, and then I finished a couple of years at UK, and then took some correspondence course from the University of Chicago. And actually, I started out here teaching school.
Oh, really?
I came here as for 1 year. And I kid my wife that if I can ever figure out why that I married and why I stayed in Kentucky, I'm going to take off. But then, of course, I spent 6 months apologizing. No, they were closing down the industrial department here.
Uh-huh.
And they were trying to get somebody to keep it open. So they said, come and stay 1 year until we can get somebody. Well, I came at 1 year, and I'm still here. I taught for about 10 years, but I saw the teaching, it just wasn't, everybody thought I was a good teacher, but you know the job that you're doing, and I wasn't a good teacher, I didn't have my heart in it. In fact, I was starving to death. I taught school from 8 to 4. Okay, my first year or two here, I worked at the Parker's Redryers. I'd meet the Parker's Redryers at 6. I'd work from 6 in the evening to 3:30 in the morning. Okay, I'd rush back to where I was staying, get a few hours sleep, then I'd have to walk all day at school to keep them going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably decided that I'd have to do something.
Yeah.
And so then I started there. Well, I started teaching school, had an insurance debit, and farming. And I was getting poor and poor by degrees. I was doing too much.
Uh-huh.
And then I finally got out of the insurance business, which that was a mistake. Then I dropped out of school and started doing pretty good, as if went into farming altogether. Then I got back in the working with the state ASCS committee as a state compliance supervisor. I liked that job. I had 9 counties, but it's too much traveling. I had to be in a county, a different county each day,
mm-hmm.
and that's just too much running. So then I dropped out of that and got a job with the This new organization just started, Licking Valley Community Action Program.
Yes, I worked there.
Now, that was the, I guess, the hardest job they ever had.
Really?
We didn't have anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're trying to create something. We didn't have any money, just for salaries. But we're supposed to be doing something.
Uh-huh.
So I stayed with them 2 years, and it was going to run me cuckoo. So I said I'd go back to ASCS. I had to get every 6 months. I had to go back to headquarters to get 6 months furlough. So I went back to tell them I was going back to work, and I ran up on the FHA man, and he wanted me to come to work with him. So that was in 69. So then I started with FHA, and I enjoyed it ever since.
Okay.
So I've been with FHA.
Okay. That's interesting. Can I ask a little bit about your wife?
Oh, yes.
What role does she play toward the farm? Does she work outside?
Yes, she's a farm girl. This is her home, Mason County.
Oh.
And we were in school 1 year together, our senior year, because I keep her being older than I am. But I went to service. I went to school, and I came back and went to service. I came back and finished school. And when I came back my junior year, she was senior. And so she went to teach school, I think, in Camelsville, and I came here. And then she heard I was here, and then she came back home, and we got to be friends, and she ended up hooking me. And no, she's a real, I don't know where she get all that stamina from. Women. She can work, and I give out, and she's still going. And she loves farm work. She has to do everything on the farm. set the bagger, scrape cows, drive a tractor and hay. It's everything.
Yeah.
And,
but she has another occupation.
Oh, yes. She taught school all up until 62. She was in the classroom. Then they started this lunchroom, what they call Kentucky Food for Service Association.
Uh-huh.
So she's with the administration department now as a food service director, which she likes that. And I tell it's a snap job, but it gets a lot of work to it.
Uh-huh.
And she enjoys that because she plans on working for at least 10 more years. I hope to, I'm looking forward to it, going out to retiring January 3rd of next year.
84?
84.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully, if we don't get in another depression or another war or,
mm-hmm.
or something, which I can't see it.
Yeah.
But if something happens, I have to work on it, I will. But I'm going out because
yeah.
I've hassled with the public now for about 40 years. That's a long time.
It is a long time.
Long time.
I think you would deserve it then.
Long time.
Let me ask a little bit about your children as they were growing up. Did they take an active part in the farm? Did they have their daily chores?
Oh, yes. I think that's the reason they all left the farm.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. I won't say that. but from when they were little fellas, I had jobs for them and they worked. Feed hogs, raise calves. See, I ran a dairy for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept me in the dairy. And then Bob, my oldest boy, his, I believe, junior and senior year in high school, maybe the first year in college, I'm not sure, I let him milk. And I made him pay for all the feed, material, and equipment, and because I let him take the balance of it and put it in the checking account. And it paid his way through college for about 3 years.
Mm.
And of course I gave them, they all had cows. They sold calves off of it. And then, of course Johnny, when he came along, he was in Future Farmers of America. He had the biker, and then he had a hog project. He won several blue ribbons with his hogs. He was quite a hog man.
Really?
I'm very proud of the things that he won. He was something with those hogs. And of course, Cheryl always loved animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's why she wanted to be a veterinarian.
Okay.
So she's doing very well.
Yeah. Did they, as they were growing up and attending school, did they ever have to, what role did school play? Did they take off from school to help with the harvest or to help with various aspects of farming?
Yeah, well, not from school, no. No, I never did let them cut any school or any class. We work on holidays, nights, Saturdays, and Sundays.
Uh-huh.
I don't like to say Sundays, but
uh-huh.
say oxen bar where we had to.
Yeah.
And we script back at night. They get the lesson first,
uh-huh.
then they come to the scripting room. And then we had, we'd get so many sticks at night.
I see.
And when we'd get our quarter, and we'd quickly go to the house. And we did quite well that way.
What about the aspect of church or religion? Was that a very prominent part of your family living on the farm? Or?
Yes, now we attended the Maze Lake Suck Baptist Church fairly regularly. Until either be 66 or 67. See, my wife's mother and father was the main plugs in church, very active, and they got killed in a truck accident.
Mm.
But every time we'd go to church, my wife would go to pieces. And then I said, well, we'll just quit going a while until you can control yourself. And we sort of got out of the habit, and
mm-hmm.
that's bad. And we will get back in the habit one of these days. But we go once in a while.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I was just, trying to find out what role it played as with your family as your children were growing up, if indeed, You did it all.
Yes, it's...
Did you attend socials and things like that
at
the church?
Yes. And we sort of grew up with the kids, like it was Boy Scout Bob that made Eagle. I don't know whether Johnny made Eagle or not, but they run the raggedy. I was glad to see get up and get the driver's license so that they wouldn't run me to death. Well, every evening I'd come in, Dad, and we got to go somewhere. Well, I'd end up taking them.
Yeah.
And, by the time I'd be so tired I couldn't see, but I'd always go.
This comes from my interest. Your children are quite successful, as you and your wife are. Do you attribute that, the success of your children in particular, to a farm living?
I think farm background
has helped them.
Mm-hmm. Farm background. I see so many kids here in the city. They get out of high school, they've never done anything.
Uh-huh.
Okay, they get out on the job market, they want a job, but they don't know how to do anything. I've had I don't know how many out home on the farm. They don't know how to do anything. And it's pitiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have to end up bringing them back to town. They don't even know how to run a fence, the post hole, paint, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's real pitiful. But that farm background, they learn how to do everything. Yes, I was kidding Cheryl about marriage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After we're a baby, you got to, you can't outdo. See, she had a boyfriend, she runs away because she wants to be better than we are. Everything. Pool, tennis, swimming, drive a nail. But Daddy, they're dumb. And I said, they can't do nothing. I said, I can do more after a baby. That's, I said, you got to use a little finesse. She never get married. But no, that farm background, they learn how to do everything. Mechanics, cooks, engineers. They help me in sick cows, bone calves, everything.
Yeah. Well, they're quite successful, you know. I just was trying to find out if there was a relationship there.
Oh, yes, that farm background.
It seems to be a very close family unit.
Oh, yeah. We traveled a lot together. We always took time to go together. We can go, and then a lot of times they want to go fishing, go hunting. I drag along with them. I'd be so tired I couldn't see. And then I remember a lot of groundhogs on a farm. And of course, I had a lot of stupid people, I guess, out there at the game. And I told them about, I seen a fellow catch a terrapin, bore a hole in the back of his shell and put a little wire on it and a corn cob soaked in gas and put them groundhog hole. And if it was groundhog, then he'd come out.
Oh,
really? Every evening when I got home, they'd have two or three terrapins. Come on, Daddy. Well, I finally had to break that up because they were killing me. But it's real, if you look back, we really had a ball. And right now, Bob will come out home. Daddy, you want to go fishing? Well, a lot of times, I'll go.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. Can you give me specifically where your farm is?
Okay, it's about 7 miles southwest from Maysville on Tail Mill Road.
Tail Mill.
Mm-hmm. You go out number 11. You know where the old roadside park used to be?
Yes, uh-huh.
Where you turn left there, you go about a mile, get a crossroad, that's Tail Mill.
Uh-huh.
Okay, you turn right. You cross the railroad track. Go about another mile, you cross North Fork, that's a concrete bridge. Then you come on top of the hill, and I'm the first farm on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an old farmhouse there, that's where we used to live, and I built a new brick home on the left.
Okay, you've already in terms of type of the farm, you gave me some ideas about the crops and the animals that you have. And again, I guess tobacco would be the one that you're most dependent upon. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much of your land do you cultivate, and how much is pasture or
most
woodland?
Of it's pasture now. I only cultivate just for tobacco now.
Oh.
Now, when I was dairying, about 20% more I put in crops.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought most of my feed. Because then you could buy it cheap.
Uh-huh.
Of course, now feed is darn high. You can't hardly afford to buy it. But then about in 60, well, up in the early 60s, they started this diverted acres. And where you had corn, you put in diverted acres, and the government would pay you for it. But I kept all mine in diverted acres. And I could, in the fall when they pay you, I could fill my corn cribs with corn, with more corn than I would have raised if I was raising it and didn't have a little money left for other things. So that was a good program. I hate to see them do away with that, but they come back with this PIC program. It's going to work
mm-hmm.
out fairly
you
well,
think so?
But not as well as the diverted acres.
Mm-hmm.
The diverted acres was real good.
Now, what time of period are you talking about now when they had that program?
Oh, I think from 60 to 67.
Okay.
And it might have went paper year, might have went 68, uh-huh. I'm not sure. But in the early 60s to the late 60s, something like that.
Okay. You mentioned that you had a dairy at one time. How come you got out of dairy farming?
Well, I was back with Farmers Home
uh-huh.
and away from home. I worked in several counties. And then that one of the main reasons I got out of it, I was working in Carter County, and I had a boy I taught in high school, A, and he'd been working for me, very good, and he wanted to milk, so that was fine. He'd milk from Monday morning to Saturday morning. I'd milk Saturday evening and Sunday. This particular day, beautiful day, away at dinner, I decided to come home. Why, I don't know. Well, I got home about, I want to say 5:30, 6 o'clock. And so when I came in the house, I heard the kids, well, said, let's take the shotgun. And said, we can go right up on him. Said, he won't know what we're doing. We can shoot him. We won't miss. Well, after back up 2 or 3 years, we had no tomcat. And he disappeared. And so the fellow up the road had some claypools. They were chicken fighters. So they bought some roosters down there, called, put them out on the run.
Oh.
And so it didn't make any difference to me. So they were laying eggs. And Jackie, the boy milking for me, would get the eggs, stay home. Well, when this old cat came back, every time a hen would cackle, this old Tom would be jacket to the egg.
Oh.
Well, and the kids came in from school looking for Tom. They saw Jackie with Tom, put in the sack, throw over the fence, and shoot. And that was a pet. Well, the only reason why they didn't shoot him from the house, and my kid's a good shot with a rifle, the winder at the stables about 2x2, maybe something like that.
Mm-hmm.
They could move it back and forth, and they couldn't get a good aim. So they put the rifle up, had the shotgun, was going to walk down and shoot it. Well, that's just about the time I came in. So it's got to be a supernatural being somewhere. I'll never figure out why I had the urge to quit and go home. I had plenty of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, I'll get you another cat. No, we want old Tom. So I said, okay, just stay in the house. So I went on stable and said, Jackie, you was here all day long. You had plenty of chance to get rid of that cat, and the kids would never known it. I said, just hang the milkers up. I said, we quit. Who's going to milk? I said, well, we just quit. I said, don't
really?
Come back over here anymore. And so he yowled around, and he found out I made it, so he quit. So then we quit milking all for a span of 6 months, maybe a year. Then Bob started to milk. In the meantime, a couple years or three had passed, and my boys loved rabbit hunting. Jackie came over rabbit hunting. He had two good dogs. So Bob and Johnny jumped up to go in the house to get dressed. And Johnny came back, the youngest boy, and sat down. I said, I thought you were going rabbit hunting. Yeah, I got to thinking about old Tom. And I'd forgotten all about the darn cat. I said, oh, me. I said, Bob, I said, put your gun up. Get out of your clothes. I said, Jackie, get up and leave. I said, don't come back over anymore. They might have got out in the field and got to think about a darn cat and shot him and said it was an accident. And I don't let him come on the place to today.
Really?
Boy, those kids hated that fella. But you know, you wonder why, in that particular day, I decided to go home. Plenty of work, beautiful day. I stopped in Oliveville, stopped in Moorhead, and took my time coming home. I got home just in the nick of time. They was coming out of the house with the shotgun.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
What time, huh?
Yeah. Give me cold chills.
So you went to a one-room school?
One-room school. And one teacher taught eight grades. They talk about the teachers now, poor teachers. It's not the teachers, it's not the system, it's the individuals and the parents. They just like my wife and I, we got notes at home, parents. Don't holler at my kid, makes them nervous. Don't paddle my kids, it upsets them. And I've had parents come to me, want me to talk to their kids. You can do more with them than I can. And I always told them, I said, if I ever marry, that's for marriage, and have some kids, and some outsider, complete stranger, can do more with them than I can, I'm going to kill them. And I still feel that way. But most parents are afraid of the kids. They won't correct them when they're little. Then when they get up big, you've lost the battle here.
Mm-hmm.
They think they're cute.
Mm-hmm.
Just like here in the office, I have some families coming here trying to work alone. They're up on the desk, in the drawer, pulling the papers. Sometimes I feel like throwing them out the window. And the parents are, oh, you're going to give me a heart attack. Won't tell them to stop, won't tell them to behave, or nothing. And then one of the greatest, finest stores in New York, exclusive. And they had everything. They had child psychologists and office room and TVs for the kids and the best child doctors and everything. Had this little kid, couldn't nobody get him with. And they had the best. So finally the janitor came to clean it up. So finally one of the psychologists said, Gina, see if you can do something with that kid. Didn't move. So they was all looking. And you do that kid. That's true, I'm gonna knock him out of
it. It worked.
It worked. But kids know the parents are not gonna correct them. They know they're not gonna be whipped. They're not gonna be punished. They're gonna do everything. They want attention.
Yeah.
And it's something.
Did you have pretty strong discipline with your children as they were?
I'd say yes. When you look back, it wasn't any foolishness. We all had jobs. They knew we had to do it. That only told them once. And if it wasn't done, I punished them, so then I lived it that time. And then I remember last time that I had to switch them a few times. And I was going to Grayson, that's Carter County. And I woke them up one morning and told them to. It's something to do, unusual. And they went back to sleep. But I had a feeling they didn't do it. So that evening when I came in, I put water in the calves. So I sneaked out the stable and the calf barrel was dry. So I went by and got me a good switch. And I warm up. Then I told them why. From then on, if I'd wake them up in the morning, if they didn't get up and do it then, they'd get them to get a big piece of paper and write it down and put it on the table so they wouldn't forget it. They never did forget it anymore. But that was just a good lesson.
Yeah.
And Bob was wearing shorts. They hadn't been able to get Bob in shorts since. He's a man now. But that was, I shouldn't have whipped him, I don't guess. But I didn't have to do it anymore.
Yeah.
But, we are sort of buddies. We fish together, hunt together. I tell them jokes, and they tell me jokes. And the little girl, once in a while, she'll tell me a funny joke that she picked up. Now I've seen a lot of changes. Some of them are good, very good. And then I remember an old fellow brought us, he's dead now. I thought at the time he was the most dumbest individual that I ever had as an instructor when I first went to Frankfurt. And I met him. And he said, told me, he said, you'll never make it. And you talk too damn slow. You just fuss going home. Well, he didn't know I didn't have any fare home, so I was going to have to stay up there. And we'd go to class. I had several classes Sunday. I have never heard him answer a question. You asked him something. That's a good question. It is sharp. What do you think about it? He'd ask everybody.
Yes, he would.
Well, everybody thought that he didn't know. Now, when he got through getting everybody's opinion, he knew. And then he told me one day, he said, never fight the system. That has stuck with me. I said, what are you talking about? He said, I said, you know anything about the Indians? I said, a little bit, yes. He said, you see conditionarian. I said, yes. He said, they fought the system. That you can't make it fight the system. Then now the white people came along. If we didn't like what was going on, said, but we didn't fight the system. Said, we went along with it, sort of improved ourselves. Said, we're doing all right. And we are. We're making good progress. There's some of these young timers now, I get so mad at them, I could kill them. But you don't fight the system. You can't make it. And that whole, that fighting the system and that old money, you can't do it. You get lost in the shuffle every time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you go along with it, do the best you can, and a lot of it will rub off on you, Before you know it, you done passed a whole lot of them, and you're doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
So that has stuck with me. And I have appreciated that old fella. He was something. And we got to be very good friends over the years. He used to come visit me three or four times a year. And about 3 years ago, he didn't come. I didn't hear from him. He never did miss Christmas. And so about the 10th of January, my daughter called me. She's in Tuskegee. And said, there's another doctor down there. And said, Mr. Prodder's so sick. So after she hung up, I called and advised the guest that he's very sick in the hospital. So then I jumped in the car and went on down there to go see him in the intensive care, and they had seen him. So then came on back, and then that night they called, he had passed. And I went on back to the, stayed with her a day or two. It was not you can do when somebody passed, but I really appreciate that old fella. He had a lot of wisdom. lot of wisdom. Don't fight the system. Do the best you can with what you got. Go right along. Mm-hmm. You make it.
You make it.
Yeah.
You did.
Oh, yeah, you make it. Well, a lot of times you're not satisfied with the progress, and you think you feel, Ella, that you've been mistreated, missed you, which you have. But just keep on. You make it. You make it.
You apparently told your children that.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And my mother, she had that foresight. She was something.
Well, what about some techniques of farming that have changed? You know, I was interviewing someone yesterday, and she was talking about, you know, tractors are now air conditioned, and that's maybe not a major change, but she was, you know, pointing out, and she, of course, talked about refrigeration when that came about, and electricity, she talked about that as a big change, but just in the planting and the harvesting of tobacco and the stripping, there's been different techniques used there also over the years.
Yes, there's been all kinds of changes. They got air conditioned on tractors now, the radios, you see a few of these fools got the TVs on them. And those things cost a lot of money. And that's the reason that we got a big list out there on the bulletin board, FHA Farms for sale. Farmers are overloading themselves. I'm a farmer, you're a farmer. You look over and I got a new tractor, you want one bigger.
Mm.
Okay. I look at you and I want one bigger with a cab on it. You're going to go with one of the cab with air conditioning. And you get so big, you're going to topple over. The income from farm is just not there like it should be. The expense of running the farm. See, years ago, when I come along, the only place that poor people could live is in the country, on the farm. Poor people can't live in the country farm now. They got to come to the city somewhere. You got to be doing pretty good to live in the rural area now. It just costs so much.
Mm-hmm.
Now you take, it's nothing for an average farmer to have anywhere from $100,000 to $250,000 tied up in equipment alone. That's just the average farmer.
Mm-hmm.
Now you take these big farmers down where southern part of the state and out west, they got maybe $100,000 tied up in one piece of equipment. And we got some farmers here that's got tractors for $70,000 to $80,000, $90,000, one piece of equipment. You got to turn over a whole lot of money to justify that.
Mm-hmm.
A whole lot of money.
Sure.
Now I got one particular farmer in Fleming County. He's got this biggest one I've seen down here, swivel in the middle. Got double tires, front and back,
mm-hmm.
four-wheel drive. Costs about $140,000. Well, now he holds about $600,000 to us, plus a lot of other outside debts. Well, now he's a grain farmer. He's got a lot of land leased and rented. This is his last year for lease and renting. Now, what's he going to do with this $400,000 or $500,000 worth of machine equipment? Unless he can find some more ground with it.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can see a big sale. Now, with this type of machine and equipment, he'll get about 10% of what it's worth. He has to let it go. Nobody wants it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pitiful.
Yeah.
And, but you see it every day, every day. Now, we don't have, right in this area, this is a good farming area, right in through here. It's general farming. We have tobacco, dairy, beef, sheep, peppers, things like that. But you take any place where they just specialize in one thing, like grain, of wheat. They're going on, they're going like flies, and it's very pitiful. And not too much, then they won't blame the government. Not the government's fault.
You don't think so?
No.
It's their own individual fault?
Individuals. The sales have been having up where they're having these protests, blaming the lending agencies.
Yeah, it's been on the news recently.
They come in here and if you don't let them have their raised sand, they'll go over your head. You send it to Congress and you get them on you. Well, we won't make the law. We know better. But what are you going to do?
Mm-hmm.
And then they end up in trouble. And then in the last, this is about 4 or 5 years in a row, we've come up with a new type loan to save the farmers. First we come up with what we call a double E. That picked the farmers up. That's worse. I cannot see that. That put a whole lot of them in trouble.
Did it?
We didn't have no ceiling.
Oh.
And now we come back this year, rescheduling, which that's a good program, re-amortize. They were behind. So if we add what they owe us plus their back interest.
Oh, I see.
And reschedule.
They rescheduled. Okay.
So that brings some more current in.
Uh-huh.
And but how much we're going to do next. We've done a little of everything.
Yeah.
Now I see a lot of changes. A lot of changes.
Well, I think, you know, it just the years that I've been in Maysville and came, went away to college and came back, you know, anyone here can see the urbanization. You know, Maysville's growing. And, you know, I can, for example, remember when 68 was two lanes, definitely, shopping center wasn't there. What's your feelings about some of the byproducts of this urbanization? Like, we have increased population. We have a lot more highways. What do you feel about the growth that's taking place in Maysville? Is it hurting the farmer?
Eventually, it's going to, in the long term, it's going to help. Short term, it's going to hurt the farmer. Well, just like I heard old news this morning, which was good, that some foreigner was planning on coming in here. They can buy several parts, ship them in here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get the details. But a plant like that would ruin walls. So I'm glad they outvoted that. But I don't know. This economy is something you don't know. I hate to see Emerson come in and buy in the Brownies. See, Emerson's a great big country.
Mm-hmm.
Brown is just a drop in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Now, two of their plants up here on Sunday, they could move Brownies and and Maysville would be hurt. They were working close to 3,000 people there. Now they're down to around 800.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a lot of houses and bars that are in trouble because
mm-hmm.
they were dependent on Brownie.
As far as your farm, has any highway come through there? Or?
No, I was hoping we got a decent road now, but I was hoping that we'd get improved highway through there. A few years ago, they were talking about improving number 11.
Uh-huh.
And of course, the landowners up down number 11 raised sand, the money people.
Mm-hmm.
So then they proposed, see, this is number 11, and Taylor Mill runs from Flemingsburg right parallel
mm-hmm.
with number 11. So they just suggested to go back here and build a super highway. Well, I'm grinning from year to year because that can put me on the highway. And these farmers back here was willing to give that right.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
Oh, because a lot of them out on 11, Well, one in particular went to court.
And, And and after they found out what their plan was, then they backed up. And they started improving them clever. But I was hoping that they'd come in through here. They didn't. I'm glad they didn't now.
You said short term that this urbanization could hurt the farmer. But long term, it's going to be okay. What do you mean by that? What do you think will happen in the future to the farmer?
That's frightening to even think. It's very few young farmers in this area. Very few. We had, I believe I left that book in Flemingsburg. Just roughly the percentage of the young people farming is very few. Most of them was 55 and over.
I read that somewhere. The average age.
Now, that's a little frightening. Now, to get into farming, it just takes a fortune. Not only kids that's possible will get into farming, that's the grandfather's been in farming, the father's been in the farming, sort of handed down. But now here's something that you can observe. When I came to this area, just like the farms in around anyway, the Finch Farm, the Clark Farm, and the Browning Farm, several of them I could name, a dozen. Each farm had 6, 7, 8 families, all making a living.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's down to one, and they know how to make a living. They just squeeze all these other little poor fellows off. They ain't come to Leesville. Now, if you travel and see this all, some of these farms were just real beautiful farms. Now as you travel by, the fence rows are going up, they're falling on the road, the buildings are deteriorating, they don't have a cheap free labor anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you going to do? Now you see for sale signs up, and they're not moving.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's one of these days, it's going to be a foreigner's market. These foreigners, unless they put some sort of stipulation on the farmers can't come in and buy. There's several big farms in this area for sale. School people came by, and they said there the fence is running down, the bushes growing up, fields are growing up and bushing from browns. What are you going to do? So I don't know. So the young people are going into farming. They'd have to borrow $2 million, and the interest in the taxes would eat them up before you could get started.
Yeah.
A lot of people talking about give farmers moratorium. Well, you can't do that. We got this moratorium on housing, but you can very easily pick that up. Not on farming. You get behind on farming, that old saying, you just lost tea bird in high weeds. just give it up.
Yeah.
Now farming is, I love farming. And I always wanted to farm, but I never was able to farm like see this picture book farm, and you see these beautiful farms on the back of it. Oh, I love to farm it. God, it takes money.
Mm-hmm.
And work.
Do you think there's anybody that could be a full-time farmer and survive today? From my research, I found that most are have other careers.
Most farmers now that are making progress on the farm, either wife is working,
mm-hmm.
some member of the family is working, or they got part-time employment, or something of that sort. No 100% farming. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to, well, I guess it's a few, but it's very few.
Mm-hmm.
Fleming County, we got a lot of good dairymen up there, and this coupling, Fleming County is a dairy county.
It must be.
We got some up there that we take what we call milk assignments from the checks. Some of them are paying anywhere from $1,000 to $7,000 a month from the milk checks. Then they get raised and 7,000 or 8,000 pounds of tobacco. Then we're getting all the proceeds from the tobacco. Now, that squeeze in the poor family, he can't buy a pair of warm boots. He's going barefooted about the year round. Pitiful.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to hold on. I don't know just how long it can last. Now, this farmer that's, I don't know. They fight this tobacco program. That's shaky ground. They're going to knock that out one of these days.
You think so?
Yeah. Because California, New Jersey, Connecticut, and a few other states, they've been fighting this tobacco program for years. For years. And raising it in the bunch, too. See, California could raise 2 crops of tobacco a year. As it is now, can't anybody else raise tobacco?
Mm-hmm.
But if they knock that quota out, anybody can raise tobacco. Just like here, they knock that quota out. You could raise any amount of tobacco you wanted to, but where you get the labor.
Mm-hmm.
This poor man or small man couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. Be the big man, he could raise it. Mm-hmm.
Do you get very active in politics?
Used to.
Used to do.
But I got so disappointed 2 or 3 times.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
Over farm issues, I would imagine.
Yeah, farm issues. And, so I kind of slacked off.
Oh.
I got some figures. Well, see, Wendell Ford and I, we grew up together.
Oh, really?
Yeah, enjoying his farm, see.
Oh.
I tell everybody, when they play home, I say, Orangeburg.
Uh-huh.
Okay, because they get a place where Orangeburg is from. What was your address? Philpott. That's where Ford's from, Philpott. What's your address? Well, Pleasant Ridge. Well, Orangeburg here, Philpott here, Pleasant Ridge. Where do you live? I live at Crane Pond, a little place called Crane Pond. And we used to almost join in farms. Now, he was 2 years older than me. I don't know how it happened. Now he's younger than I am. He said his age back. And I'm going to tell him about what he does. And, we used to keep in touch with one another.
Uh-huh.
But we haven't now for 6 or 8 years.
Uh-huh.
I've been intending to get back in touch and just haven't. I hope to, if I can, things go good, and I can go out the third, and get a chance to get my feet on the ground and breathe again. Because I love to visit. And I'm going to pay back. See, I have a lot of visitors, friends.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to pay them back after I retire. Hopefully.
Yeah.
If my health holds out. Everything goes halfway decent. But, I kid him about this at age. It took a little of him. But he's 2 or 3 years younger than I am now.
Louie, I don't think I've gotten this. Farm that you now own, was that your wife's? Did she grow up there?
Or? The farm, the family farm, she grew up there, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But one that I live on, we bought that in 1952.
Uh-huh.
Through Farmers Home Administration.
Oh.
And I think I got it 3.5%.
Really?
And I paid, I believe it's $125 an acre, and everybody thought I was crazy for paying that much for it, which that was high at the time. Uh-huh. And of course, I've been offered 10 times or more right now. And now that's our farm is on the Wheatonia, Helena area.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know where that 170 goes uh-huh. from Wheatonia to Pisaville.
Sure.
That first farm that you turn. It lays next to, you know where Wooders Farm is.
I believe so.
It's next to that. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is, I've certainly enjoyed this. One last question that I'm interested in also. Would you advise, are there more advantages to being in farming or disadvantages, do you think, at this point in life as you look back on it, as you're still living in?
Oh, yes. It's from my time up, it's more advantages. And it's advantage to my kids because that made them want to work, improve themselves, and get away from that hard work. because we worked. We had to. We worked hard. And they knew it had to be a better life than to work like a dog and a small amount of proceeds we got from it. No, it's that farm life is, I've been traded for nothing in the world. And if I had to go through it again, I'd do probably work a little harder, venture out a little further. I wouldn't trade it for nothing in the world. And my youngest boy wants to farm, but I hate to see him tie himself down in farming. Of course, he'd have a heck of a lot more advantage than I did because I got the land, I got machinery, equipment, and livestock. And I started out, I had to buy everything. Mm-hmm. And everything. I need my pick. So I don't know what he'll do. He thinks he wants a farm. If he does, it's fine.
It would be nice, I think, for
tradition. I'd like to see him continue on, but boy. He knows it though. You know, this rough way to go. Mm-hmm. You understand that very well.
Last thing I'd like to ask you, when did you marry?
December the 26th, 1950. Day after Christmas. That was a big mistake.
So
we've had 33 years coming up this December. A lot of people, when they see us together, wonder, look like you all are so glad to see one another, to be with one another. And, well, we don't see one another often enough. We're always glad to see one another. Married life can be wonderful if you make it that way. I'm around a lot of bad people. Fussing, cranking, knocking one another's heads off. I couldn't live that kind of life. If I couldn't get along peacefully, one of us would have to go. Don't make sense. Arguing, fight, fuss. And then one of the reasons that we've gotten along so well, any major thing, we sit down, we talk over it. Very few married people can sit down and talk to one another. Very few. I got a brother and wife. He and his wife can't say two words to one another. So therefore, they just don't talk. And I couldn't stay around people and not talk.
Mm-hmm. Don't you think you and your wife, being a farmer and she working equally hard on the farm, you had common goals and you had work to do and people don't have that, I think.
Hey, you got to have common goals. She wanted, we wanted the same thing. That's a big help. Just like that old saying, the team pulling. one trying to go one way and one another, that it don't work. You got to pull together. And it's pretty easy. We're going on a cruise this summer, leaving the 10th of July. And get back to 17th. We're looking forward to that. But I'm from a very large family background. My mother's mother was a family of 17 boys and one girl. She was the only girl. And my mother was a family of 16. And there's 15 of us. Now, her grandfather, this is amazing, was out of slavery. Great-great-grandpa moment. Mm-hmm. Okay. When each one of his boys married, the people kicked that kid out then. When each one of these boys married, he gave them 100 acres or more in horse and buggy. When my mother's mother married, he gave up 52 acres, horse and buggy, and a little money. Now all that bunch, farming folk, community down called Buckhorn, Utica, for years. They did well there for a while. Very good. Up until late 20s and early 30s, they started to big time it, buying cars and running to the city. And before we knew it, they'd have sales at the courthouse. Couldn't pay the taxes, couldn't pay this, couldn't pay that. I think all that land in there for miles and miles in there. Might be one or two still left, heirs still left. But we have family reunion there. We're going down there the 4th. Called the Pope Mormon Reunion. Descendants of this particular fellow. And it's a sight to
be a lot of people.
From all over the country. He's right scared to see so many people that look alike.
Mm-hmm.
Right scary. And those Mormons, I don't care where you see a Mormon, you know the Mormon. God. Just almost.
Yeah.
It's right there. And most of them have done real well. Most families, a whole lot of them fell by the wayside. But most of them have done real well. Teachers, lawyers, doctors, crooks, deadbeats and drunks. But like I tell them, if you're going to be a drunk, be a good one. And we got some good ones.
What was the worst year for your farm?
Be fine.
What was the worst year for your farm here in Mason County?
I'd say it must have been in about either 56 or 57. See, I used to rent a lot of farms.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't remember which year. 56, 57, extremely dry. And I had this Farm Bureau insurance, tobacco insurance. And when I sold my tobacco and paid my necessary bills, I had to sell 3 or 4 of my best dairy cows to pay my tobacco insurance. And I haven't had any tobacco insurance since. Which I'm ahead. Mm-hmm.
Did farmers go under that year? Were there some local farmers?
There's a few, yeah. Well, now when the chicken business back in the early 50s, don't mention chickens to me. That was a big flop. Big chickens was booming, and I got into it, and you couldn't give a chicken away.
Hmm.
And of course, you're too young to remember Chandler. We got in and passed his father, a farmer, because couldn't sell his chicken eggs over the market like they usually do, you know.
Uh-huh.
And that,
What did you do?
Well, I hustled around for a year or two and stole around to restaurants and things.
Uh-huh.
Then they caught up with me, and then I gave my chickens away, you know, all I could, and then he ended up killing the rest of them and feeding the hogs. So I don't have chicken. I don't have chicken on my farm. So you're missing chicken now. That's enough. That's the breaking point. But we've had some good years. We've had some losers.
You're still glad to be a farmer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I always wished that I was able to have been a full-time farmer. But, you don't find many full-time farmers.
And there wasn't a point in your life where you did do it full-time. You've always had...
Yeah, because my wife worked.
Okay.
I'd say from, 55 up to about 63.
Mm-hmm.
I rented all these out of farm.
Uh-huh.
Worked my food stamps again. Started back with State Compliance Supervisor, SCS, with the mayor, to Licking Valley, and go back to Farmer's Home. And at Licking Valley was something. I enjoyed it for a while, but then it got to be a pretty headache. But do I create something? And you didn't have anything to create anything with.
Mm-hmm.
See, you can't do nothing if you don't have money. That's a thing. And my job was to work with the poor. Well, if you don't have something to give the poor to help themselves, what are you going to do? They get tired of you talking.
Mm-hmm. I worked there also.
Yeah. What years did you work there?
I guess it was about maybe 77 to maybe...
Well, you was in the good years. I was in when it started, getting off the ground. You worked here with the Licking Valley.
My office was in Flemingsburg.
Flemingsburg. Uh-huh. Well, you probably heard about Wisco.
Uh-huh.
Bill Perkins.
Sure, yeah.
Well, I was before them. Is that off now? Not you can knock that off.
Okay. I want to thank you
no.
on tape for it. I do appreciate your time.